It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode 33, I believe. And Michael Citro here from themainland.com. And joining me this week, it's just the two of us, Andrew Harrison. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm getting ready for Friday, and I can't wait. It's sad to be the second game, but I'm super excited.
Yeah, I mean, I just got my parking pass for Friday night, and I just realized the last home regular season game of the year already. It just seems like we just had to fill the bowl, you know? I mean, it just seems like it was just here, and now it's gone. And, you know, if Orlando City doesn't come up with two wins and get a little bit of help, it'll be over for good for this inaugural MLS season. And I'm really ready for Friday, but and we'll get more into that with our guest, especially, and we'll get into Friday's game a little bit later. But why don't we start out by talking about that mess on Saturday night with the U.S. men's national team against Mexico. It was actually a fairly entertaining game, but it was pretty one-way traffic most of the game in Mexico's favor, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree it was an entertaining game. It just... the U.S. never looked like they wanted it. The pressure was completely on Mexico. I thought it was going to be a lot higher scoring with the way Mexico played in those first 15 minutes. But I think just like the United States, Mexico has the same problem, is they have nobody who can really finish the ball. And that really started to show as the game kind of progressed. It was a good, entertaining, enthralling affair. I thought Jeff Cameron had a really great game. But Mexico was always going to win that game, regardless of how long it went on for.
Yeah, I agree with you about Jeff Cameron. I mentioned this on Twitter during the game. I thought he was phenomenal. And you couldn't really say that about a whole lot of the guys on the team. I thought that Cameron had a good game. I thought Bradley worked very hard. He wasn't always on point, but at least he put in a really good work effort and had a fairly solid game. Perfect delivery on the goal. In regulation for the U.S. And Bobby Wood off the bench looked good, but other than that, it really wasn't a real good night for the U.S. I think that I'm pretty much over Jozy Altidore. He just doesn't seem to have it or want it or something. I don't know. He's just not very involved. And Clint Dempsey was pretty absent, and that's not normal. I mean, for him, he's Deuce, you can usually count on at least to show up.
Yeah, I have never. I'm going to put this on record. I have never liked Jozy Altidore. I don't understand why people think that he's a great soccer player for a national side. I feel like if he was belonging to a different nation, he wouldn't make the squad whatsoever. I was disappointed in Dempsey's play. He at least usually does kind of put on that performance when he puts on the jersey, and it just wasn't there for him that night. And I think I said it last week, I think it's really disheartening to know that there is no consequences for the people that are in charge when you're in trouble and you know something needs to change. And I think the players played like that. And I think the new blood tried to come out because they weren't tainted by that feeling. And they played better, like Bobby Wood and Jeff Cameron's played a lot less games. But the continuation of changing center back partnerships and not having any consequences for people who make mistakes will always lead to bad gameplay and the results like we saw on Saturday and then the game against Costa Rica, which was just a big disappointment.
Yeah, I want to stay with Mexico for a minute. It was a bit of a heartbreaker because, you know, they fell behind. They got the equalizer and... you know, even though Mexico had more of the possession the rest of the first half, you could argue that the U.S. had better scoring chances in the first half from the time it was tied 1-1 through halftime. Then in the second half, it was all Mexico, couldn't do anything else, go 1-1 into extra time. They score in the first half of extra time. It's 2-1. It's looking very bad for the U.S. Then Bobby Wood ties the game 2-2. And then a minute from penalties, a just absolute golazo for Mexico. I mean, you talk about Mexico not being able to finish, but they sure did finish on that occasion.
Oh, it was probably one of the better goals I've seen to end the game in a while, and also a little bit of a redemption for Aguilar because he looked like he could have been off in the first half. He was playing some dangerous moves, so the fact that he was the person that came on and got the winner, or stayed on and got the winner, was really great. I kind of agree with you a little bit on the first half that USA could have pulled ahead, but I think it was always just going to be Mexico's game. I mean, you saw the pressure that the US were under in the second half, and they just couldn't deal with it. I mean, I know they didn't concede in regulation, but they unfortunately looked completely out of their depth against a team that looked a lot more well-versed in playing together and looking more comfortable. And this game is about feeling comfortable with the people you're playing around and knowing you can save mistakes with the people behind you. And that just was never in the USA's favor against Mexico. And I think playing at the Rose Bowl, I would say, I know it brought out a great crowd, but was a potential mistake for a must-win game. You wouldn't say, oh, I've got to win this game, let's go play in Mexico. And right. That was the atmosphere that those guys had on that field that night. And I think that kind of also played into it a little bit too.
Yeah, you may be right. It would have been nice to have seen what would have happened had it gone to penalties with Guzan playing as well as he's played. And, really... They, you know, some of the subs that Jurgen brought on were good penalty takers. Like Evans is a good penalty taker. He brought him on in the late going there. And I don't know. It's disappointing not to go to the Confederations Cup. As someone from England who's not maybe as invested in the U.S. team as some of us, what do you make of Jurgen Klinsmann, the job he's done, and really some of the things that he said in the media? I mean, he lays a lot of this on fans not being savvy and not knowing what he's doing and not really understanding the game. And then the thing that he did with Fabian Johnson, with sending him home, saying that he was, you know, basically lying about being injured and taking himself off and giving up and throwing in the towel. And then, you know, then we hear from Borussia Mönchengladbach that, yes, indeed, Fabian Johnson has an injury. And, you know, what do you make of all this?
There's several things I make of it. First of all, I think Jurgen's demeanor is not good for player morale. To say to a player who had barely had any good minutes for Mönchengladbach because he had been returning from an injury, then the guy plays 117 minutes and tries to be substituted, I get that. But then don't blame that on the player. Blame that on your selection choice. Blame that on the fact that you potentially knew he didn't have 120 minutes in him. You knew it was going to be a close affair. You know that you have to plan better. And that's on him. I think it's also really wrong to come out and display that problem in public, too. That's something that you keep behind closed doors. We know it never goes well, especially on the national stage when you have that kind of fight with a player that really... you could see being a bit of a U.S. stalwart going forward. He's a good age. He's got a lot of games left in him. He's definitely World Cup eligible for age and pace and everything else. I don't see why you would kind of try to blow that. I think my problem with Klinsmann, all told, is when you have the whole job, and when I mean that, I mean you are the coach of the national team and you have the director position for player development, when... you are playing the guys who potentially don't have the next tournament in their future, and you don't give those guys the chance to get blooded on the big stage, you're just perpetuating the problems moving forward. And that is not a help for anybody. And I feel like that's what Klinsmann's doing, but you can't... he's getting it from the top down, so I can't just blame it all on Klinsmann. It's... mm-hmm. The whole federation potentially, and I've been there before. England have protected coaches for a lot longer than I've wanted, but sometimes they turn it around. I mean, we complained about Roy Hodgson, and he just went 10 for 10 in Euro qualifiers, and all of a sudden I'm happy again. So there's kind of an element in me that says stick with the guy you know, because you could get somebody worse, but I feel like he's had his time. And he definitely doesn't deserve both roles. You have to find somebody who is better at developing players, and maybe that's the college level. You know, we see it in college football all the time where they go to the NFL and they come back to college because that's just where they belong. Maybe that's what needs to happen to help develop the U.S. into a team that can compete for 2018 and 2022.
Yeah, and Tab Ramos also out there with the U.S. youth team, so he's another potential guy waiting in the wings. We'll get into the U.S. men's national team a lot more in the off season when we have not any Orlando City games or MLS to talk about. But we can talk about Costa Rica because Breck Shea, our very own Lions left wing / left back / right wing / right back, played 72 minutes at left mid. Was just last night. It was Tuesday night as we were recording this on Wednesday night. Breck hadn't played with the U.S. team since June, and it showed. He didn't look real sharp. He did have one really excellent cross that Yedlin got on the end of and kind of made a mess of. But other than that, he wasn't great. I didn't think he was as terrible as some of the guys in the national media made him out to be. I thought that considering the fact that really the team had no desire to play that game after such a heartbreaking loss a couple of nights before, bringing some new guys in. And, I just think that and Tim Howard looked pretty good as well, coming back from, for his first game back in a long time. What were your overall thoughts, and not just on Breck, but on the game overall? I mean, was it even worth playing?
I got to say, it probably wasn't worth playing. and my first thoughts on Breck were, I definitely have to agree that I don't think he played as bad as people made him out to be. He didn't have the best of nights, but you also have to remember that he's only been playing football for about a month, like after surgery. He's also playing with guys that he doesn't get to play week in, week out with. And once again, this was another experimental side. I mean, we saw so many squad changes, not just team changes, but we saw a lot of people get moved out of the camp. And to come in, be fresh, and just be expected to play, I think we got a game that Klinsmann and the team were always going to play. We weren't going to see great entertaining football against a Costa Rican side that has some really great players right now. We had to bring an A game, and I think we were really playing our B and potentially our C game. I didn't like some of the partnerships. I think that when we made it to halftime and he basically took off the three players that had played on Saturday, that was kind of him giving up and making say, hey, let's just see if we can get a nil-nil. Let's get some face out of this game. But we also got a game that 9,100 people saw in person. And really, I'm surprised it was that high if the quality was going to be that low on the field.
Yeah, sounds like you got some, like a dog shaking around in there.
Yes.
Sounds a little wound up. Well, why don't we turn our attention toward Orlando City? As this podcast is going to go live, right around the time the news is going to break about the USL team over in Melbourne, and they're going to play at Eastern Florida State College, it appears, and that's going to get announced. And, what are your thoughts on Orlando City 2, or whatever they're going to call it? First of all, what are your thoughts? What's happening in Melbourne?
I'm excited for the guys who have been with this team for the longest time and have been driving out from the Space Coast, and Melbourne specifically is an area that are going to get a chance to have kind of their own team. I think this is a great chance for Orlando City ownership to really solidify the Central Florida area, and I mean that, Tampa as well, and even a bit of Jacksonville, just to kind of try to bring everybody into that area. I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about having a team much closer. I know we've had a lot of injuries this year that have really set the team back and didn't give us a chance to send people out on loan, but the fact that we could potentially have somebody do double duty in the event that this happened again would be really good for the fact that we can blood those guys and bring them on better so that we're not having to have them sit on the bench or just cool their jets and just get training all the time. Great players become great players because they play from when they're very young and they play consistently. Having a close base is excellent. It's how all European teams are based. They all play together, work together. They just happen to one voices out for the first team, the other guy goes out for the B team or the reserves. This is how great franchises are built. And I think that's exciting. I will definitely be there for the first game. I don't know if it will be an every game affair for me, but I'm very excited about the fact that we have realized that we're going to continue to grow our own pyramid, because that is what Orlando City does.
Yeah, and I think it's great that you know, some of the people that love the intimacy of the USL game and you know, that sort of that minor league feel to it, I think they're going to be able to get that back. I think people that like to watch the future stars are going to make the drive over and check that out, and certainly those that live east of Orlando will probably go to as many of those games as they can. It's going to be less expensive and that kind of thing. So, you know, it'll appeal to families who, you know, you got a lot of kids and you know you don't want to spend MLS prices. Maybe you drive out to the USL game. It's not that far to Melbourne, quite frankly. And how great is it going to be for people like – how great it would have been this year to have it for people like Harrison Heath and Estrella and, you know, Tyler Turner and guys like that. I mean, it would have been a phenomenal opportunity for them to you know, train every day with guys like Brechet and Kaká and then, you know, drive over to the coast and you know, play competitive soccer all year. So we'll be able to do that next year. We're gonna, we'll find out what this whole thing is gonna be about. So like I said, about this time that this podcast goes live out over the internet, we will be getting reports from the event over there, the press event. We're gonna have a couple people over there from the mainland covering that. So we'll bring you all of that. Hopefully they'll give us some clues about the, you know, hopefully they'll have a name. Hopefully they'll give us some idea of what, you know, the kit might look like. And maybe we'll even, you know, have that first player signing. We hear that, you know, an Irish youth international has been training with the club for the last couple of weeks and has agreed to terms, reportedly. A guy who used to play center back for Norwich City. So here's a guy who's 20 years old and he's the perfect signing for the USL team because he could develop and become an Orlando City center back at some point. So, I mean, everything about this is positive for me.
Oh, I'm super excited that I think this is the mold that grew us into the franchise that we are. I mean, look, we have Luke Bowden. We have Kevin Molino. We were able to bring in Ramos and Saren a year early. I think this is what this allows us to do, and it also potentially eases us up from the cap issue too. We can kind of move some players around, so if we know they need a year, we can at least sign them to our books and try to develop them. Or if they want to sign for us, they want to sign for us. If they don't, we could at least sell them potentially and make some money, which is also another great part for this franchise as a whole. But also picking up that new talent that you have the ability to develop yourself, there is nothing better, and I'm sure that Heath was probably wanting this from day one to make sure that he could get the guys that he wants playing the style of football he wants, but for the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what all takes place and what happens tomorrow and what gets announced. It's clear that this group knows what they're doing in building USL teams. I mean, as successful as Orlando City was, and then, you know, basically a spinoff of the same group goes out and puts together Louisville City, and all they did was finish with the second-best record USL and make it to the Eastern Conference Final against the best team in USL this year in their first season. And they were, I believe, second in the USL in attendance. So, you know, they know what they're doing. They know how to do it. And won't be a big crowds probably out at the Orlando City 2 or whatever they're called games in Melbourne. They're going to have to do something with the seating. USL says that you have to have 5,000 seats. Eastern Florida State College only has 1,500 seats right now, and you have a year to comply. But it really kind of depends on what they're going to be able to do selling tickets, because if they sell a bunch of tickets, they're going to actually have to rent those grandstands and have them brought in this year. If not, they can wait till next year. But it'll be pretty cool to see what they do out there. I'm looking forward to checking it out. And we'll have at least one person probably dedicated to covering that team. So the mainland will keep you informed on the USL developments. Another thing that came out this week is it seems we're getting closer and closer and closer to adding an NWSL team. And we've seen, like, you know, people digging and finding out that Orlando City may have you know, reserve the name or you know, a website, OrlandoPride.com I think it's Orlando-Pride.com. So the speculation is Orlando Pride is the new team coming into the NWSL, and Orlando City is going to run that. And, you know, what are your thoughts on where they might play, and what do you make of some of these rumors of you know, U.S. backup goalkeeper Ashlyn Harris, who's from Florida, and maybe Alex Morgan? You know, what are your thoughts on NWSL overall?
My thoughts, I've got to agree that it's probably some of the, I'm going to say it's the second best women's league right now, behind the English women's league. That's been around for a lot longer and has been a lot more sustainable. I'm excited that it's actually going to meet for its fourth year for the first time in women's soccer history in the United States. That's an exciting movement that I think Orlando City really wants to be a part of to help grow the league, just kind of has done for men's soccer and MLS. I think it would be great if we could pick up a local person like Harris to be our goalkeeper. I mean, you need somebody solid at the back. We've proved that throughout this entire franchise history that you need to have a great goalkeeper to win games. And if we could somehow get Alex Morgan, I mean, that's just marketing nirvana right there for a brand new team. And to be able to come out and say that they have Alex Morgan, I mean, I went to the U.S. women's game against Brazil last year, and I would say at least probably 50% of the U.S. women's jerseys, they had a name on the back of them. So that's something that the club is being smart about. I don't think I like the name Orlando Pride, but that's obviously not my decision to make. If it is going to have that, I think it has to have Orlando City in it at least. I just don't think that that's – I feel like we could have done something better. I just can't think of anything off the top of my head right now. but I like the fact that we'd go local with Harris and get a big-name star, as well as just be ready to go from day one. I think the Women's Soccer League requires – at least two people of considerable talent to even be competitive. And Orlando City has proven that you have to be competitive from day one, because that's still how potentially fickle women's soccer is, but soccer in the United States in general.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if we've seen anything from this ownership group, it's that they're going to try to do what they can to be competitive and win and defy expectations, whatever that means. And I think they'll do that with the women's team as well. I think they'll want to make it a successful venture. And I think, you know, certainly if you can bring in an Alex Morgan, you're going to sell a lot of shirts, and you're going to draw fans, which is half the battle. But the other half of the battle is keeping people interested by having a good product on the field. And I feel like, you know, I did some looking around at some of the NWSL rosters the other day, and I think almost every team in the league had two or more players. I think there was one team that didn't have two or more players from the U.S. women's national team. So that's a bonus, because every team that comes in, you're going to get to see players that, you know, the fans know who they are, which is kind of cool. A Julie Johnston or a Hope Solo or somebody like that. So where do you think they might play, though?
I'm going to say that they're probably going to split it and put it. We've already seen Melbourne taken care of, so that kind of locks up the East Coast. You've got Central Florida, which is obviously the Lions. I think you're probably going to see Disney or Lakeland to kind of appease that Western Florida. And also just Disney would be a great place for that kind of atmosphere, I think, for a new team. It would definitely bring in people. It would make sure that gate receipts were high and actually give it something that people can follow. It's easy to get to. I don't think they want to just throw them in the Citrus Bowl and have them play in front of 10,000 and make people call it a failure. So a small, intimate arena for that team would probably be a good place to start, and then I can't see them not moving to the new stadium, just like Portland, where everybody plays at Providence Park.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Disney probably makes the most sense. It's not a great venue, but at least, you know, if you have a halfway decent crowd, it doesn't look empty like the Citrus Bowl. I mean, if you drew, I don't even know what it holds at Disney. I remember it was much, much smaller than the lower bowl at Citrus Bowl, but it was, you know, let's say 3,000 show up for a game. at Disney, that looks good. And at Citrus Bowl, that would look like nobody's there.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of important. And I agree with you. I think they'll move into the new stadium when that's finished. So they got to survive the first year. I think that's really what it's about, is survival mode and getting into that new stadium. So I'm hoping they stay with purple. I kind of actually like Pride because it has that Lions tie-in. And, you know, I would probably prefer that they call them Orlando City Pride, but I think they're if this is any indication from what we've seen for the website reservation or domain reservation, whatever, it looks like it's going to be Orlando Pride. But I guess we'll probably find out more. They've just extended the waiver wire date from October, whatever it was, to the 21st. I think it was originally supposed to be the 12th. They pushed it back to the 21st, and a lot of the speculation there is that they're waiting on Orlando to get announced and everything. And Orlando still needs a coach, although I'm sure they've been working behind the scenes to get that in place. I think the obvious choice, if they can get her, is Tiffany Roberts, who is the head coach at UCF and a member of the 1999 U.S. Women's World Cup team. And she's been a very successful coach, and I think that they'd be happy to have somebody like her.
I mean, I think she makes a great pickup in terms of she already knows the local area. She's already got good scouting connections through college. I think it really helps develop that younger base that women's soccer would ultimately need to survive in this area. I have a little interesting feeling about the waiver wire, though. Just extending it to the 21st seems a little odd, since our game wouldn't be here till the 25th, which was potentially when the announcement would be. That would probably imply that we're going to see an announcement for that first game against Brazil, which, I don't know, that seems a little odd to me considering they are coming down to play here, but maybe they just understand that they also need to get it away, and that was the longest they could postpone it. So I would like Tiffany Roberts. I think she would be a good pickup to get this club started on a solid footing.
Yeah, and it would be great to have yet another, you know, well-known person in women's soccer to be at the helm. So, this is an ownership group. Like I said, they go out and they find the right people. They always seem to find somebody that's got a lot of quality. They bring in people like Tim Holt, and it's just amazing that they have that desire and they're willing to pony up to get, you know, high quality people in any position they can. So looking forward to the Orlando Pride, or whatever they ended up being called, looking forward to the USL team, obviously. And we're going to look forward to New York City FC on Friday with Orlando City playing its home finale. By the way, ska rockers Less Than Jake are going to be playing at the Main Street before the game. So, I mean, not my cup of tea. Gavin likes them, but not my cup of tea. But, I mean, a lot of people know who they are. That's actually not a bad get for free, you know, for a free concert outside the stadium before the final game. But we've got a guest coming up in here in just a little bit. We're giving him a little more time to get ready. He had a tough commute, and he'll be with us shortly. But New York City FC, here's what scares me about them. It seems like they have gotten, you know, sorted out here in the last month, and they're going to have their stud players, and we're not going to have Shea or Kaká. So, you know, what do you make of what kind of lineup are we going to be able to throw out against them, and how are we going to close the season with a victory and getting all 3 points?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, they're not the side that we saw at the start of the season. I'm going to say that we're potentially not the same side either. We've kind of grown. Mm-hmm. We've had that Hard Knocks kind of season that really kind of makes a team what it is when it comes down to the clutch games. Obviously, you've already mentioned we're not going to have Kaká. We're not going to have Shea. It was pretty much just announced we're definitely not going to have Ramos. So we're looking at a completely different side for what we've seen before. I think you're going to have at least Bowden and Ash, and you've got to remember Ash hasn't played in 2 months, so he's going to be a little bit off the pace a little bit. You're going to see a side with Lewis Neal probably once again using that Kaká role to hopefully great effect. I mean, we bash him a lot, but we're still undefeated this season in this last game, this last stretch when he started. So he's got to be doing something right. And then you're going to have Winter. I mean, I think the one place we're not going to be too concerned is still going to be, we're going to have Soren Hinegita hopefully able to take Villa out the game. I think the two hardest parts are going to be whether or not Pirlo and Lampard show up to dominate that midfield. And that's really where it's going to be trying to take care of them. We got Hegita and Saran, but if it's three events, two, that's not great odds. So we're going to have to look for Neil to pull in. I think Winter is going to have to track back. And he's got good legs for getting around the field. But it's going to be really tough to hold them out of the game if they genuinely want to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm hoping that the old legs on the Citrus Bowl turf will be a bad combination for them, for Pirlo and Lampard. The guy that scares me the most, other than Villa, though, for New York City, is Poku. Mm. He is a very, very gifted player, and he really tore us up in that 5-3 loss in New York City at Yankee Stadium. His passing was immaculate. He was very strong on the ball and was not able to be moved. And he's the kind of player that you know, people are talking about. This guy could get dual citizenship and be a U.S. men's national team star. And, you know, he's, from what I've seen, this is a very impressive young player.
He's definitely been impressive. I remember watching from the start of the season, and he was one of those players where he has grown along with that franchise, and I'm going to say that I know Laren has had a great rookie season. He's broken records, but if Laren continues to grow, this is who he turns into. He learns to use his body a lot better. He learns to control and outpace people off the ball and becomes even that more of a game changer than he is right now for Orlando City. I don't know if his Poku played a whole game yet. I know he doesn't seem to. I never feel like I see him stay on the field for the whole game. So maybe that could potentially be the one chance where we can try to limit him and also hopefully limit his impact on the game and not get paced around by him all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we bring in our guest now to talk a little bit more about New York City FC and the big matchup on Friday. All right, joining us now from Hudson River Blue, our fellow expansion MLS bloggers, is Editor-in-Chief Rafael Noboa y Rivera. Raf, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Outstanding, outstanding. Can you believe it? Our inaugural season is coming to a close. It feels like it just started.
I know, right? Where does the time go? Where does the time fly to?
I don't know. Here's one thing I wanted to quickly ask you right off the bat, because it's so hard to keep track of all of the international comings and goings. Is the international window going to keep anybody from New York City out of the lineup on Friday?
The only player that I can see it keeping out of the lineup is Mix Desterud. He didn't start on Tuesday's 1-0 loss to Costa Rica. I have a really hard time saying those words. Don't get me started. He came in as a substitute, played most of the second half, if not the entire second half, I think. So I think he's the only guy that I would conceivably see not playing. But one thing that Mix has shown throughout this entire season is just an extraordinary engine and just an ability to really recover, particularly on short rest. So it wouldn't surprise me if he comes off the bench.
We've had two games this season. We had a tie at the very start. We had a 5-3 win for you guys at Yankee Stadium. What do you think you guys have grown? We're both kind of on a good spurt right now towards the end of the season. What do you think we need to know heading in to this final game that you guys have really learned from the last 2 months?
I mean, there's so much that I think the team has learned as a whole. I think you almost have to, like, split the season in two or three parts when you stop and think about it. You had this stretch where, you know, David Villa was really like the only designated player that New York City had. And that stretch of play was punctuated by this just horrific 11-game winless streak that the team suffered through. And part of that was, you know, the fact that, you know, they were working with, you know, David Villa as the DP and then a bunch of, you know, people that they acquired in the expansion draft to fill out the team. But also it was just, it was one of those injury crises that you really only see in a game like Football Manager, for example, where just like everybody got injured at one time or another, even Villa, you know, who's been just remarkably healthy. And, you know, it was just really tough for the team to recover. I mean, at one point they basically signed RJ Allen, who's been, you know, really good as a right back. Yeah, and who's lately displaced Andoni Iraola, you know, who the team signed over the summer from Athletic Bilbao, you know, as the first choice right back, in a manner of speaking. They basically signed him off the street. I think he had been a coach at like Monmouth prior to him joining the team, and he basically got signed like one day, and he came in as a substitute like 2 days later. So that's how rough that initial stretch of the season was. And then, you know, the team sort of seemed to find a rhythm, and then you had to sort of reset because first you added Frank Lampard, you know, just over a year after he was supposed to have joined the team, and then Andrea Pirlo joined the team. And so, again, the team went through some real growing pains as they tried to figure out how those players were going to go ahead and interact with each other. And then, you know, eventually the team sort of found its rhythm again. You had a nice little three-game win streak. And then, you know, the Blues lost to DC United, and that was pretty much the season right there. You know, what have they learned? I think the jury's still out on that. I think Jason Kreis obviously has, you know, his preferred diamond formation that he likes to play. But, you know, one thing that I think is greatly to his credit is that he's thrown all kinds of things at the wall just to see what sticks. You know, he's tried, you know, a flat 4-4-2, empty bucket 4-4-2, 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, 4-1-3-2, you name it. I think the only thing he hasn't done is gone three at the back, basically. And he's never done that in his coaching career. So, you know, I really didn't think he was going to do that now. But he's, you know, he's really, you know, at Real Salt Lake, you know, it's a small market team. And so there was this sort of ethos where the team is bigger than any one individual. And clearly that's not quite the same setup that you're going to have at New York City. You know, for starters, it's a New York City, you know, markets don't come bigger than this one for starters. He's got all kinds of money courtesy of City Football Group. But you know, and on top of that, you know, we might as well say, you know, you've got City Football Group, which, you know, they're going to spare no small, you know, amount of money to sign three DPs straight up. And they're not going to be like, you know, Chicago Fire, Colorado Rapids type DPs like, you know, Tom Maloney. You know, they're going to go, Andrea Pirlo's in the market, fine. We're going to sign Andrea Pirlo. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo's in the market, fine. We're going to sign Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, that's the kind of thing that they're going to do because that's the kind of thing that, you know, City Football Group did with Manchester City. You know, they really haven't done it with Melbourne City in the A-League. To me, watching what Melbourne City has done and what New York City has done has been a really instructive exercise because you can definitely see CFG's footprint much more heavily in New York City than you can in Melbourne City.
Mm-hmm. Rafa, you know, everybody knows about Pirlo and Villa and Lampard and Mix. For my money, the two players that have really, really shined for New York City this year and to me are frightening players to play against this year, Thomas McNamara and Poku.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't really imagine the success of that team without those two players this year.
Yeah.
What is it about them that I mean, because McNamara was a, if I'm not mistaken, was an expansion draft selection.
Yep.
And Poku just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, some people knew who he was, but clearly he wasn't like a prospect that people thought was going to step right in and you know, play this well right away.
Right. You know, let me start with Guadua Poku first of all. I mean, I actually had some small inkling of who he was, mostly because I'm a huge American soccer nerd. You know, where people nerd out over European soccer, I really nerd out over American soccer. So, you know, not just MLS, but NASL, USL, what have you. And so I have some, like, small idea of who he was. I'd be lying if I were to tell you that, you know, I thought he was going to be a stud. I had no idea that he was going to be a stud. And the reason I had no idea that he was going to be a stud was because he came to the team from the Atlanta Silverbacks of the NASL. And he was with he did fairly well with the Georgia Revolution, but that's NPSL. That's like the fourth tier. I mean, you're talking like basically like beer league type teams there in a lot of places, you know? Not so much the Georgia Revolution. They're actually like, you know, a legit like development team, you know, college players and that sort of thing. But, I mean, that's kind of the milieu. So, I mean, it's easy for a guy like, you know, Poku, so to speak, you know, to like beast in that sort of environment. But then, you know, he stepped up to the Silverbacks, and he didn't do anything with the Silverbacks. As it turns out, like, nobody did anything with the Silverbacks last year. And a lot of that was because they were undergoing a huge amount of turmoil. Like, Eric Winalda was, like, coaching the team via videotape, and that lasted, like, a few weeks, and then obviously that didn't work. Anyway, so he came to the team, and the first thing that you see with him, you know, if you go to practice, it's like you see this guy and he's definitely got skill. He's definitely got size and presence and all that stuff. And he clearly knows what he's doing, but he's also incredibly raw. I mean, it's really hard to put into words just how raw and rough Poku is. Which is, you know, on one level you're like, oh wow. Like, you know, you definitely don't expect a guy like that to contribute right away, which he has. But at the other end of the spectrum, you know, if he's this good when he's this raw, you know, how high is this guy's ceiling? You know, and so, you know, it's, to me, it's actually a really good thing that he wound up in a, you know, in a place like New York City FC, you know, with a guy like Jason Kreis, you know, who's got the sort of track record of developing guys like that, you know, because he very easily could have ended up in like Colorado or Chicago. You know, and
sure.
You know, and that would have been horrible for his development. You know, can you imagine a guy like him being coached by, like, you know, Frank Klopas or something? You know, so Poku, you know, to me, has a lot of potential. He's really frightening. He's really good. I think he's kind of leveled off a little bit in the last couple of games, last two games. You know, sort of hit that plateau. People have, you know, because one thing that I think, and you guys are really probably very familiar with this, you know, MLS is obviously a very, you know, even league, and it's full of parity. It's full of parity not just because of the money. It's also full of parity because it's got a lot of, like, really good coaches. Maybe not necessarily people who are tearing it up on the tactical level so much in that sort of thing, but definitely people, you know, who are really obsessive and really hyper-dedicated to scouting and research and that sort of thing, you know? I mean, like, a guy like Ben, you know, a guy like Ben Olsen probably spends, like, you know, 100 hours a week, you know, working on, you know, game tape and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, where Poku, you know, was probably really effective, you know, in that second game, let's say, right? I'd be, you know, really surprised if he was just as devastating in this game, because, you know, we would have played, this is the third time we're playing, you know, this is the second time you guys are coming up against us. And, you know, I think, you know, if Adrian Heath, you know, hasn't, like, game planned for somebody like Poku, then, you know, I think it would be very fair of you guys to criticize him, right? You know, and Adrian Heath is not a dummy. I mean, like, let's be clear. I mean, like, a lot of guys, a lot of those, like, USL guys, you know, they may necessarily, USL, NASL guys, you know, making the jump to MLS, you know, might be difficult. But, you know, I think Adrian Heath has definitely acquitted himself, you know, as a foreign coach, which is, you know, which you definitely never see that in MLS. So that's awesome. McNamara, the one thing we need to keep in mind with McNamara is that he really hasn't played for the last few weeks. A lot of people think that's because he's been in the doghouse. I find that really difficult to believe, quite frankly. McNamara doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's a hellraiser, who'd be a malcontent in the locker room, for reasons I'm about to go into in a second. I think the reason you haven't seen him play for New York City FC is because Ned Grabavoy is now occupying his place in the lineup. Grabavoy, unbeknownst to just about everybody, apparently was playing most of the season with a broken toe, which, you know, says a lot about, you know, just how hard the guy is. You know, but he's not fully healthy. And, you know, he's been a guy that, whether, you know, at Real Salt Lake or here in New York City, Christ has definitely depended on, you know, to make his teams hum. And that's because Grabavoy does a lot of the dirty work in Diamond Formation, does a lot of the dirty work in the midfield.
Yeah. You know,
the way I described it to somebody, to a New York City fan, was Ned Grabavoy has this vision on the field where he can actually see plays before they develop fully, and so he breaks them up before they develop. And so, you know, you want Grabavoy on there because he basically prevents tackles from being made, you know? And that's not really something that stands out to somebody who's watching the game. You know, it's sort of like one of those hidden skills. So he's very underappreciated, I think. McNamara, the reason I don't think he's in the doghouse is because, you know, he was out injured for a good chunk of the year, and obviously last season with this knee injury. And so, you know, we're in the locker room after, you know, I think after the third or fourth game that he played, and, you know, he was really coming into his own. And I said, you know, like, when you were injured, you know, what were you doing? And he was like, so, you know, obviously I did rehab and that sort of thing. But really, when I wasn't doing that, I was watching game tape. I was literally watching MLS Live. I was watching game tape of, like, you know, all the different people I'd be going up against when I came back and just taking notes. And I think that really says a lot. You know, he's a really intelligent guy in that sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what makes him very scary. Because, you know, he's the kind of guy, you know, he's, you know, when I was talking with him, you know, I got this almost like Peyton Manning-esque sort of sense where, like, you know how Peyton Manning just, like, obsessively studies, you know, defenses and figures out how to, like, deconstruct them? You know, that's what Tommy does. You know, he really deconstructs, you know, what those defenses are doing. And I think that's what, you know, that's how he over, you know, he compensates for his lack of speed, you know, and that sort of thing. He's not a very fast guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ralph, let me ask you this before we let you get out of here. I wanted to get your thoughts on who the starting 11 will be for New York City.
Yeah.
And then maybe how they might attack Orlando City in terms of, like, Breck Shea and Kaká not being in there and how that'll affect the game. Also, we need to get your score prediction.
Okay. So let me start out with the lineup. I think Christ is basically going to go with essentially the same lineup that we've seen, with a couple of exceptions, and I'll break them out here. Over the last few games, you've basically seen him deploy sort of this 4-3-3-ish, 4-2-3-1 lineup. I call it a 4-3-3 mostly because that's how I line it up, but it's a fairly fluid lineup. And it switches between a 4-3-3 and a 4-2-3-1. The reason I say 4-3-3 is because that's what Lampard is really most familiar with from his time at Chelsea. And that's definitely how the team lines up from the beginning. So in goal, I think you'll probably see Josh Saunders, who's just been a rock, probably one of the MVPs, if not the MVP for New York City FC this year, in terms of just keeping him in games. So if he doesn't play, it's because Christ has decided that, okay, now he wants to see what he's got on the bench in terms of, you know, the off season and looking towards next year, now that the playoffs aren't going to happen. I don't know that Ryan Mira is going to be the substitute. I think you'll probably be looking at Eirik Johansson, who played one game this season, and that was against the New York Cosmos in the Open Cup. And it's just a giant of a guy, 6'7", I think, and just acquitted himself very well in that game for just being a rookie goalkeeper, I think 21 years old. So if it's not Saunders, it's probably going to be Johansson, who comes over from the Manchester City Elite Development Squad, the EDS. On defense, you're probably going to see Chris Wingert, you know, on the left. If not Wingert, you'll probably see Angelino, the 18-year-old left wing back, you know, left back. Just been absolutely impressive this year. This, you know, despite coming over in the summer, despite being 18 years old, he's another EDS product from Manchester City. Hernandez and Shea Facey, you know, again from Manchester City, would be your center back pairing. Jason Hernandez, you know, is a New York City native. You know, he's been around. He and Facey have had a great pairing this entire season once Christ got that figured out. Then on the right, I would expect to see RJ Allen, unless Iraola is coming back off an injury. But I think Iraola's sort of fallen out of favor with Christ. So I would expect to see Allen there at right back. In the midfield, I think you're going to see, obviously, Andrew Jacobson as the sort of holding midfielder, the number six there. Then Andrea Pirlo sort of in the middle, and Frank Lampard a little bit further up. So it's sort of like a little midfield triangle there, with Andrea Pirlo in the middle and Lampard, you know, a little bit up top. Then shuttling on the left, if it's not Ned Grabavoy, it's definitely going to be Tommy McNamara. You know, because that's where McNamara's played, you know, most of the season. I think you'll probably end up seeing, if Mix plays, it'll be on the right. That's where he's played lately. If it's not Mix, then you'll probably see either, you know, I almost see Mehdi Bellucci maybe, but I doubt it. I really do think Mix is probably going to end up starting on the right there. And then, obviously, David Villa up top is the lone striker. And if Villa doesn't go, then it's probably going to be Patrick Mullins. You know, on the bench, probably either Mira or Johansson. There, you know, if Saunders is starting as your goalkeeper reserve, then probably, you know, you'll see Poku in the bench. I don't think Poku starts. I think you'll see, you know, Patrick Mullins, you know, who's done fairly well as a substitute striker. Kyrie Shelton, you know, usually plays on the left. You know, maybe a couple of others on that defensive bench. So, score prediction, you know, New York City doesn't really have anything to play for in this game. Not to say that they don't try. I just think that, you know, Orlando City can definitely still qualify for the playoffs, be that first expansion team to play in the playoffs since 2009. So I definitely have all to play for. And as a result, I think Orlando City, I hate to say it, I think Orlando City wins this game, but I think it's going to be an excellent game. I think, you know, final score is probably something like 2-1, maybe 3-2. It's going to be, I think, a wide open game. It's going to be a tough game. I wouldn't be surprised if New York City wins it. But I think Orlando City edges it just because they have, you know, still that playoff prospect to play for.
Okay, Rafa, we'll you know, we'll definitely see what happens on Friday. We're looking forward to it. As you mentioned, this has been a good series. The first game was a 1-1 draw. The second game, very, very entertaining, 5-3 New York win that, you know, Kyle Larin went nuts for Orlando City. And we'll see what happens in round three, because one thing that's very difficult for a team is to, you know, you don't really have a whole lot of surprises left by the third time you play a team. So, Jason Christ and go ahead.
That's why I think it's going to be a very even game. You know, this is not going to be a blowout game, I don't think. I think this is one of those games where, like, you know, the winning goal comes in like that last 10 minutes, you know, whether it's Kyle Larin, you know, nailing it, whether it's, you know, Patrick Mullins coming off the bench, Poku coming on off the bench, you know, it's going to be a very even game, I think. And I think it's going to be good value for people who are watching.
Mm-hmm. Should be a big crowd, too. Christ against Heath, round three, the Orlando City finale. We could be seeing a crowd in excess of 40 or 45,000, depending on how many they can shoehorn in there on Friday night. So, Ralph, really appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah.
Let people know where they can find you on the internet.
So I'm on Twitter at Naboa personally. Hudson River Blues Twitter is at Hudson River Blue. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/Hudson River Blue, if you want to go ahead and follow us there. And the website is www.hudsonriverblue.com.
There you go. Rafa Naboa y Rivera, he is the editor in chief of Hudson River Blue. Thanks so much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me. You guys have a good night.
Well, thanks again to Rafa Naboa y Rivera. Really appreciate him coming on, and he's the kind of guy you could talk soccer with all night, Andrew. He's just really a really knowledgeable guy and very passionate about the game.
Yeah, I love meeting people like that who have that kind of passion that I have for the game too, and that he's followed it at all levels. It was really exciting to get somebody's perspective like that.
Yeah, so the only thing we have left to do before we get out of here for this week and call it a podcast, your key matchup and score prediction for Friday night, Andrew.
My key matchup, is kind of something I've already kind of alluded to. I think it's going to be Higuita Soren against Pirlo Lampard. Yeah, Pirlo Lampard are kind of both a little bit defensive-minded too, but I think really it's definitely the battle for the center park. In this game, Pirlo can just launch a ball, unlock the back four, and so that's got to be my pairing. If they can keep those guys quiet, I think it's no doubt an Orlando City win. I'm kind of going to go with Rafa on this one, though. I think it's going to be I don't want to say cagey. I think it's going to be high scoring, but I am going to say 2-1. I think there will be a disallowed goal at some point. I'm going 2-1 Orlando City.
All right. I agree with you that that's incredibly key to the game is watching Saren and Higuita and making sure that they can keep those guys in check. I know that Saren and Higuita was on yellow card suspension when we played at Yankee Stadium, and that played, I think, a big role their offense running wild. I don't think it's going to run wild this time. I think they will get a goal, possibly two, because they're just that talented. They just have that much raw skill. And even if you give up an untimely set piece or a set piece in a bad spot, they can burn you. So it's going to be hard to keep them off the board. My key matchup is service to Kyle Larin. That's going to be a premium for me. I think that without Kaká there, without Shea to give more width to the team and the more confidence to the team, it's going to be up to guys like Carlos Rivas and Adrian Venter to get the ball into the box, and also Lewis Neal. But Lewis Neal's key passes numbers, I'm not going to look at them right now to see what they are because it would just probably depress me.
Yeah.
But Rivas is a guy who can give service, excellent service. Venter can give service as well. They're going to need to get the ball to Kyle Larin in dangerous spots for this team to be able to score goals. And I think with all to play for in a big, big crowd, I think I'm inclined to say 2-1. And I have a feeling, a weird feeling, and sometimes these, could just be indigestion, but sometimes they actually come to pass. I think Carlos Rivas finally gets a goal.
Oh, my goodness.
In an MLS game. I think he finally... And it might be really like just a garbage goal, like that he just happens to be in the right place at the right time after somebody else takes the shot. But I think Carlos Rivas finally breaks that goose egg and gets his first MLS goal. So that's what that's how I see it happening. I see it a 2-1 as well. And last week I think the last home game I actually think I predicted 2-1 was I think the first time it wasn't a completely horrible prediction all year. So maybe we'll get on a roll here. Orlando City going for 5 wins in a row. Did you ever think you were in the middle of August that we would ever say Orlando City going for 5 wins in a row?
I don't think I ever thought we'd say 3 games in a row after the season, after the summer. The fact that we've managed to claw our way back into this thing to still be 2 games away and potentially still able to make it is good, but the fact that we can say 5 games in a row feels pretty good too.
Yeah, well, we'll see if it happens. I'm certainly here's the thing. Orlando City gets a win or a draw, they clinch the better record between the two expansion clubs, no matter what happens in the last week of the season. So that is, to me, everything. Getting at least a draw in this game is everything, because playoffs are still a long shot. You still need Montreal to not get more than 1 point the rest of the way, and Orlando City needs all six. That likelihood isn't great, although I do like the Revolution's chances against Montreal. I think if Toronto, I think they may be in the process right now of clinching. They may not be inclined to be playing Javinko and Bradley and those guys in the finale if they've clinched. So, it's an uphill battle. It's a long shot. So at least a draw is what I would love to have, so that we could at least have bragging rights among the expansion teams this year.
Yeah, I mean, we went into this with defy expectations. I think if any time that you finish above a team that has gone through the exact same situation as you have to consider it a winning season. And just for bragging rights alone, even though it's potentially, people don't say it's a rivalry, just for bragging rights alone, we have to win and make it happen. For the fans, at least, for those guys who have turned out during those dour months, that we can still say, hey, we beat the team who went out and spent all this money, and we're still the better team.
Yeah, that'd be nice, especially, there was Alan wrote a nice story this week about Adrian Heath. Maybe he should get some consideration for Coach of the Year. We heard Rafa talk about all the injuries New York City had, but I don't think anybody can hold a candle to what Orlando City went through. New York City may have had some injuries and may have had a lot of injuries, and even to key guys. But has anybody lost more guys to injury, suspension, and international call-ups than Orlando City this year? I think not. So we're not crying for New York on that account. And hopefully we'll be able to at least get the draw and finish above them, have some bragging rights. For Adrian Heath to have taken this team with as many issues as it had and with the depth problems that it had all season and so many first-year MLS players – and to have them in contention for a playoff spot with two match days to go is a heck of a coaching job, in my opinion. So kudos to Inchy, and let's trust him to bring us a win in the finale and 3 points and keep this thing going and make it one more game as long as, New England can take care of Montreal. We might actually go into the last week of the season with the playoffs still alive, and that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think without a question, when you look back and just, we came through Montreal's two games back and we're still in it, I think you have to hopefully believe that it's going to be fate that we make it into the playoffs, and that, you don't want to say this, but you don't want to see money change the game, and realistically the signing of Drogba was money, and potentially that might be the make it or break it, and you want to say in a league of parity, this is what it's about, getting down to that last game, and anybody can still make it in.
That's right. Well, we'll see what happens Friday night, Andrew. We'll be back next week to break it all down and look ahead to the Philadelphia Union in the road finale on the 25th. And we might actually even get into the U.S. Women's National Team friendly against Brazil at the Citrus Bowl, which happens the same day at that time. And I haven't heard yet, but I'm hoping that there'll be a big watch party at the Citrus Bowl where people can come in early and watch Orlando City on the big screen and then watch the U.S. women take the field. That'd be nice. But until next week, for Andrew Harrison, Michael Citro of themainland.com, you can find us at themainland.com, themainland.com, like a lion's mane. You can find us on Twitter at themainland. And I am signing off till next week saying, go City!